Happy New Year, you glorious global community of failure connoisseurs. I hope that you flushed the steaming turd of 2020 down the bowl of time and have entered 2021 with open hearts, open minds, and open legs. It's probably going to be awful, but don't worry, me and Barry are going to be here with even greater examples of how humanity have absolutely ruined itself comprehensively over the past 10,000 years of recorded history. And that will hopefully act as a nice counterbalance to the enormous canal of effluent that is likely to be poured on our heads by reality in the next 12 months. Still, got a laugh, haven't you? Welcome, one and all, new listeners and olds. As you'll know, Barry is still currently at home recuperating from his operation, having his mop browed by his husband and his belly filled with choice goods from his confectionery cabinet. And I'm sure he will be delighted if you would care to wish him well either. Not through thoughts and prayers, because we're not Republicans, but by keeping him in mind and lobbing him cheeky little cat gifts on Twitter. You'll hear his voice, well, you'll hear his voice in about 5 minutes in this episode, but you'll also hear his voice more in these bits in a few weeks' time. For now, to business. As ever, Patreon business. We're going to say thank you and welcome to new members of our community. Thank you to Egil Sonason, who is another annual membership donator. Thank you also to Luke Gancharski. Luke, I'm now going to say your surname in several different ways and I hope I get the right one. Gancharski, Ganyarski, Kancharski. And you tell me which one of those is the least wrong. And Luke has donated $5 a month, which means that he gets to choose a topic that we will do a show on. And welcome back to Courtney Taylor. Courtney previously supported us and then through her own volition, as is entirely allowed, she decided to stop supporting us because of her own life circumstances. We sent the Worsford Ford Omerta over to her house. She's finally seen the error of her ways. And not only has she come back to us as a donor, she has increased her donation to $20 a month, which means that not only does she get to pick another topic for us to do a show on, she gets to judge that topic, and you will get to hear her dulcet Midwestern tones in an episode released probably in February and March, as she is the special guest for the show. So if you would like to get involved on Patreon and support the show and get more involved in the way this podcast is made and recorded and sounds, you can do that. Head to patreon.com/worstfootforward, where you can donate from as little as £2 a month all the way up to £50. I mean, no one's gone for the top tier yet, but hey, it's 2021. Let loose. Let's all have an irresponsible regard for our own personal finances. You can look on there for what the various tiers get you, and you can hopefully also see on our website what our various goals are. Just a couple little things on Patreon. You'll notice I mentioned quid rather than dollars, because Patreon have finally allowed us to accept money in our own currency. When I first got a Patreon account set up, it had to be dollars, and there was some tedious Kafka-esque bureaucracy to get through to change that. I won't bore you to tears with it. I now have, don't know the fine print, I presume if you already support us, that won't alter how much you give. But if it does and you have a problem with that, let us know. But from now on, wherever you are in the world, you'll be giving the currency equivalent to pound sterling. And to be fair, that shouldn't worry you, because Brexit will have ruined our currency. The other thing to say is, as has been the tradition for the past 3 years now, on January the 2nd, me and Barry cashed out our Patreon for the year, because as artists and performers, even in non-pandemic years, January tends to be our driest month. So that's when we like to get a bit of a Patreon boost. And thank you is all we can say. Thank you for your continued support. We are giving ourselves a healthy pat on the back this year, because we've sat down, done the sums, worked out how much time we spend on researching, recording, editing and promoting, and we think we're now earning the minimum wage. We're pretty happy with that. So if, having heard all that, you think, god damn it, we need to get these boys up to a working wage, well, here we are. Here is your chance. Head to Patreon. You can support us that way. One final word on support and listeners is the other stats that we totted up was how many episodes were downloaded last year. You'll have heard via social media and our chat at the start of this podcast that 2020, even with the pandemic, or probably between you and me guys, because of it, has been our most successful year. And it's nice to have that silver lining on a mushroom cloud for the both of us. Last year, 100,000 episodes, or just over, of the show were downloaded and listened to. And that's mind-blowing. That's mind-blowing. I mean, I know it's not the equivalent of playing a gig to 100,000 people as much as my little egotistical stand-up comic mind wants it to be, but it's still rather wonderful that a daft idea that me and Barry came up with in a pub in northwest London 4 years ago has reached the ears of 100,000 people. Or has reached the ears, let's face it, probably slightly less people, 100,000 times. Nevertheless, thank you. It's genuinely humbling, and I hope you stay with us for this episode and for the rest of the year. I will tell you just a little bit about what we've got planned coming up. We've got on the horizon two episodes already in the can, one about the world's worst Nobel laureate, which allows us to cover a lot of different bases, and one about the world's worst artist. I am using the next 3 or 4 months of lockdown as an excuse to try and nab some fun big guests who we might not otherwise be able to. We've got a couple of cracking Irish comics who are hopefully scheduled to do it. Hopefully some rather august historians as well. And I have my eyes on one very big comic who is a big noise in the trivia community. I will say no more in case we don't get him, but I have emailed his agent and I have everything crossed that we will get him. That is, I think, all that needs to be said for the start of this episode in this year. I'm really excited to bring you more absolutely smashing episodes along with Barry and our guests. I have an inkling that this podcast is going to continue to grow. We're going to get some more fascinating guests on. It turns out the world of heroic failure is bigger and more vivid and full of even more bizarre stories than we could have imagined. So keep listening, keep supporting us, keep recommending us to your friends, family, enemies and postmen, and we look forward to entertaining you for another 365. And now, to kick things off, let's talk about trees.
Hello and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxday, and each week I, my co-host and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. This week we are turning over a new leaf and letting some new ideas take root, and hopefully not going barking mad as we go in search of the world's worst tree. An unusual subject, absolutely, but we like to avoid cliches or hoary old chestnuts on this show. We refuse to rest on our laurels or allow ourselves to become beached by complacency, so we've spruced up especially. We're feeling pretty okay. We're prepared for anything. I spent a lot of time scouring the internet, even though I'm pining for even more research. In fact, there's a pile of stuff which, if I had read, would have been useful. But let me assure you that we'll still offer up suggestions, some of which may pull ease you, and others which might make you feel a bit sick. But I can only assure you that after this intro, my co-host is feeling even sicker, more and more by every second. It's Ben van der Velde.
My, that introduction was evergreen.
You look furious.
Absolutely am. What a waste of mine and everyone's time. Goodbye any new listeners who decided to start the new year with a new podcast.
Yeah.
All I can say to you and listeners older than you, it's purgative. He's got them out of his system now, and I assume there will be no more.
Oh, no, I feel like this is the hangover. My coping mechanism throughout 2020 was lots of puns, and I think I've carried it over into 2021 big time.
Oh, well, how delightful for you in the new year. It turns out that 2021 is going to be absolutely as bad as 2020. I look forward to your Brexit and civil unrest puns, followed by your American Civil War II puns.
Can we let people peek behind the curtain and tell them we're still recording this in 2020? So who knows? Maybe those comments are really deeply insensitive. Who can... Yeah.
Actually, to be fair, we are in the week of mourning for the dual death of the Queen and Prince Philip due to COVID. So they probably are very, very insensitive.
Did you get them in the sweepstake?
Yeah, mate.
Oh, I got Jimmy Carter.
Before we start knocking off even more much-loved global treasures, a brief thing I want to ask before we introduce our guest. This week's topic is all about the world's worst tree. Were you as a child a good tree climber?
Absolutely. I loved climbing trees when I was a kid. And we had a row of evergreens in the along the drive of my house at home. And they were so close together that their branches grew across each other. So you could climb up one at one end of it and then basically move along the ramparts from tree to tree to tree at the top of them down to the very end of them and back again. So we used to, as a kid, pretend we lived in a castle made of trees.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
I used to climb the imagination provided by trees in the medium of books. I liked the idea of climbing physical trees, but after getting about 6 foot off the floor, it was a little bit too much for me.
Yeah. I am that 1 inch taller than you, I think. It makes all the difference.
Yeah, it's just, you could just get all the tricky little handholds.
Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm glad we're on either side of the tree climbing fence.
No.
Hedge.
Thank you. Yeah, fence is very offensive to the tree community.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, trees looking down on fences going, oh, that was Errol. Anyway, talking of tree climbing, let's talk to a man who is very much arboreal. Let's get arboreal, in fact, my friends. There you go. That's one back for my Team Vanderveld on the punning. Our guest this week is a former illustrator of children's books who set down his pencil in favour of a chainsaw in order to become a tree sculptor. Since 2005, he has sculpted dragons, angels, lighthouses, and an entire menagerie of wooden wildlife. Although art is not competitive, although podcasting is, so like and subscribe, guys. Like and subscribe. We want to be number one in Malta this year. He is a proud four-time English Open chainsaw carving champion, as well as winning the Husky Cup in Germany, whose trophy is an atrocity to dog lovers, and placing in Canadian, Scottish, and Japanese competitions too. We are delighted to welcome the Rodin of the rainforest, the Bernini of the boskage, and the Warhol of the woodland. It is Simon O'Rourke.
Good to meet you. What an intro.
You're very welcome. What an intro. What a job, mate. I have met a tree surgeon in my life on stage hosting comedy shows, and that was great fun. It beat talking to someone in IT. I have never met a tree sculptor before.
Well, yeah, it's an unusual job, but quite a nice one. I just get to turn larger bits of wood into smaller, prettier bits of wood, essentially.
Do you walk around forests going, God, that looks so unsightly. I just need to tidy it up a bit.
Pretty much, yeah. I think, yeah, it's difficult for me to drive past big tree stumps, certainly that have been cut down already, and not think, I could make something from that. It's difficult to walk around woodlands without seeing shapes in the trees.
That makes you sound like an absolutely stoned as a stoked hippie, and I love it. Seeing shapes in the trees, man. Please tell me, when you meet someone with a stunning look for the first time, you're like, but wait, I must sketch you, and then you get a 2x4 out of your car and a tiny little chainsaw.
Yeah, well, I've likened my collection of chainsaws, because it's not just a single chainsaw. It's like having a collection of paintbrushes. So it's obviously, you know, you get a big log, you need big chainsaws for the big cuts and small ones for the detail. And it's like a collection of paintbrushes. So I essentially want to, you can't really kind of sketch somebody. I mean, I have had somebody stand for me as a model, but they have to have ear defenders on. And at least safety goggles. So it makes it a little bit more difficult to see the definition. So
you have to interpret them as Princess Leia all the time. Just
we'd both agree. We'd love to see the Queen getting an official portrait from Simon with the goggles and the ear protectors on.
I usually try and avoid hanging out with people who admit to having a collection of chainsaws. But for you, I'm making an exception. and B... It's a real sideways move to go from children's book illustrator to tree sculptor. Were you just bored of working in 2D?
No, it's, essentially it was kind of a... it was a happy accident, is what I kind of refer to it as, really, because I finished my degree in illustration and needed a job, and there aren't any jobs as an illustrator, so I kind of... I thought, I need work. A friend of mine had just started a tree surgery business and he needed help on the ground, feeding the chipper and stuff. So I kind of started helping him, loved the outdoor work, did all my training, did a certificate in arboriculture and all of that stuff, did all my tree climbing training, and then really, really enjoyed being a tree surgeon. And it wasn't until 2002 then I saw somebody using the chainsaw to carve and thought, oh, I'll give it a go. See what happens.
That's amazing. It's one of the most interesting careers that I think we've had on the podcast, and it makes a lovely change from so-and-so as a writer, actor and comedian.
It really does, yeah, but the heckling you get in tree sculptor is brutal.
Some beavers at the side, I'm going, call that carving, mate.
The nice thing about it is heckling can be blocked out by the ear defenders.
That's so very true.
That makes a big difference, I imagine. I have two wee questions. One, you're talking before about your collection of chainsaws. Now, one of my favourite artists is Salvador Dali, who famously had a paintbrush with only one bristle in it that he used for fine details. So what is the smallest brush you have, and why is it not a potato peeler?
Well, occasionally I do go down to level of chisels. But I've always kind of said to people, it's like it's for me, it's whatever cuts wood. And I'm more like a Rodin in expressionism than going into ultra, ultra fine detail like Michelangelo, for instance. So I do use Dremels and things like that with little bits of, you know, tiny burr bits and all the rest of it. And I have got a chainsaw that's got an 8-inch long bar on it with a tiny little tip on it. So you can actually get some really fine detail just with the chainsaw.
It's amazing. Oh, well, clearly you're the answer to the question, got wood. But what are you not so good at? What would you say that you're worst at in the world?
I would definitely say, and my wife will back me up on this, that I am the worst at organising my time and myself. And until she got on board with the business, I was consistently double and triple booking myself.
is that because like everyone else works in hours and minutes and you work by rings on a tree?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it's kind of like I'll see you in 2 inches growth time.
That's a hell of a chat up line, Simon.
So, as we mentioned, this week we are talking about the world's worst tree at the suggestion of one of our Patreon donors, Jakob Faber. Thank you, Jakob, for donating an annual lump sum as opposed to monthly donations. If anyone's interested in doing that, you can hop on patreon.com/worstfootforward, as indeed our guest has done. Simon is one of two guests on the show who've also become a donor, which is very nice. I think maybe it's just Stockholm Syndrome set in when he started listening to some episodes for research. But nevertheless, we've got him and we won't let him go.
Damn right. And also, you have set the bar for future guests.
Yeah, absolutely. There's now an entry fee to this podcast.
Oh, God, we've turned our podcast into a bringer gig. Yeah. What have I done?
Anyway, Ben is the first one to help us find out what the worst tree is. Ben, leaf us off.
I am going to branch out and do just that. I began by looking at people who live in trees. And...
okay. Squirrels. Ben hates squirrels, guys.
Squirrels. I mean, they're essentially flamboyant rats, aren't they?
Yeah.
There's two that I found, one specific, one general. The specific one is a chap called Mick Dodge. And Mick is one of these people who's taken the spirit of Henry David Thoreau and is living off the grid. He has lived in the Ho rainforest in the Pacific Northwest, and he lives inside a variety of mossy tree stumps.
Inside them? So he carves into them?
I don't know if he does any carving.
Oh, well, he just climbs into them, whatever hole
Pretty
is
much,
available.
Yeah.
nuzzles down and uses the lichen as a blanket.
Oh, lovely.
He's a proper man of the forest. He's a proper Grizzly Adams. He says, there's not a better bedroom in the world. His daily routine, he wakes up every morning, he forages for his breakfast. He will happily eat either roadkill or elk killed by a mountain lion.
Spends a lot of...
He's basically a human hyena wandering around behind lions fighting to scavenge.
Pretty much. He's basically waiting for the mountain lion to finish and going, are you gonna have any more of that?
You gonna have any more of that? Right.
The lions are there like, have you finished that? Because if not, I'm going to give it to the mic. Stop feeding the hermit under the table, please.
Yeah. Oh, and to their cubs, they're like, listen, there are hungry mics who live in a tree stump. You don't finish that elk. He apparently, this is my favourite thing about him, spends a lot of his free time reading, which again, wandering around a forest with a book, offensive.
Yeah.
But he says, if he likes the book, he will plant a tree and share the book. If he doesn't believe in its value, he'll plant a tree anyway, but he'll use the book as a toilet paper or a fire starter.
Wow, that is a hell of a life choice.
Mm-hmm. And he calls himself the barefoot nomad because he doesn't wear shoes. And you know, there are you know, those distance runners who run. I've heard a story on Radio 5 of a woman who ran, I think, from John O'Groats to Land's End without shoes on. And after a couple of days, your feet just build up calluses where they can take it. His feet are covered in an intricate tattoos of a root system. And he said, my feet became my map, my compass. When you step out of your shoes, your senses come more online. You have over 200,000 nerves in the feet. So why you would tattoo them, I do not know. And he came, I don't know who found out about him, but there is a documentary about him on National Geographic called The Legend of Mick Dodge. And when he was asked on it what people will think of him after the show, he cheerily replied, I have no idea and don't give a shit.
I think you have to not give a shit to make that decision about what you're going to do with yourself.
Absolutely, he is you know those. There was that book that was out in the stores a few years ago of The Art of Not Giving a Fuck, and I imagine it's just a picture of this guy on 250 pages.
You've reminded me, there was an Ethiopian runner who won the 1960 Olympic marathon running barefoot. Abebe Bikila, I think his name was, and he ran barefoot. He won it again in Tokyo in 1964, but ran in shoes that time. Proving he could run on both surfaces, if you like.
Oh, and I thought you were saying, just to show off, he ran from one Olympic marathon to the other.
Yeah. Have you ever encountered people living in trees, or, you know, had disputes about things you're carving?
A few people have said, oh, you know, why are you carving the tree, or was it dead to begin with, and things like that. But I've never really kind of had that. We've never done any job that's been controversial enough to do that. Back when I was a tree surgeon, however, we were felling, clear felling a small woodland so that they could build a Lidl. and it was on a slope, and I was a lackey at the time, really. So I was running up and down the bank, attaching the wire rope to these trees to drag them down the bank when we'd done it. And somebody had spray painted that phrase from the Native American chieftain guy, the only when every tree has been felled and every fish has been fished that man will see that money cannot buy something. Or I can't remember it.
Yeah.
Offhand now, but wow. Somebody had spray painted that right across the fence. It was a tiny woodland in Wales.
Wales needs Lidls.
Yeah.
unless they were agitators from Aldi.
So it was Wales needs Lidls is the terrible sequel to Mars Needs Mums.
Yes, that's the one.
Have you ever encountered any trees that, because, so we've got, when I used to live up in Archway, there's a tree in Waterlow Park that looks like a gateway to another dimension. Are there any trees that you've seen that have got a sort of an aura of the fae about them?
Oh, definitely. There's quite a lot near, in and around kind of North Wales. There's a lot of these huge, big old trees. And we're right next to one of the seven wonders of Wales. I think they had to, like decide on seven wonders for virtually everything. And anyway, these yew trees became one of the seven wonders of Wales, and they're reputed to be about 3,000 years old. It's very difficult to tell because you can't count the rings.
Yes.
It kind of makes me think it's the evolutionary process of the counting trees in Terry Pratchett. that would be the ideal thing for them, really, to have the age tattooed on the side of the tree. but by the time it gets to a certain amount, you can't even chop it down to count the rings because it's hollow in the middle. So there's no way to actually tell.
You've just reminded me of a story I read. In 1964, a man called Donal Rusk Curry killed the oldest tree ever.
Oh, is this by mistake?
Kind of, but not really. It was a Great Basin bristlecone pine in a park in North America, I think in North Carolina. And he was studying trees he was a grad student at the university, and he was studying trees in the area and looking for very old specimens. And they typically do it by cutting the core of the tree. They get a little boring thing and stick it into the middle of the tree and manage to extract a bit of it. But he couldn't claim a sample from this tree called Prometheus, it was called. And basically, his core got stuck in it. And it was so stuck that he had to have help taking the core back out again. And apparently a park ranger helped him by cutting the tree down to remove it. And then he began to age the tree and realised he had just felled a 5,000-year-old tree, the oldest tree ever recorded.
Wow.
Yeah, they're not massive, big redwoods like you'd imagine. These are like little gnarly trees, these bristlecone pines. Yeah,
it's more like a kind of aged bonsai where the rings are so close together that you can barely count them.
Good Lord above. Well, at least we don't need to do a World's Worst Park Ranger episode.
Yeah.
Talking of very, very old trees, the other tree I was going to talk about that you could live inside, there's a tree that's at least 1,500 years old in Derby in Western Australia. It's called the Boab Prison Tree. It has a rather stout trunk that is 14 metres in circumference, and it has been cut to form a small cell used as a prison. And basically, the local police force use it as a drunk tank.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
I have a feeling there's a pub inside a tree on the opposite side of that coin. I'm trying to remember where it is. I'm going to have to look it up now. Because I love the idea that you might get, like... Oh, it's another one. It's in South Africa. It's a big baobab. It's a pub in the trunk of a 72-foot baobab tree in, I'm not going to be very good at pronouncing this, Modjadixkloof in South Africa. It's the bar sits about 15 people, has an electric light, a phone and a dartboard. And it's you could go for a night out there, get pissed and then get locked up in a different tree and then go back to, and then crash back at Mike's when they let you out.
It's wonderful. It feels like they've got their whole Ewok infrastructure set up in these countries.
Yeah.
Definitely, definitely. Precursor to Rivendell, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, of course it is.
It is the most exciting thing, a treehouse, as a kid. And I'm pretty sure that excitement doesn't really diminish as an adult.
No, definitely not. I can testify to that. Yeah. Well, I'm staying in a treehouse in Oxford in January. It's a treehouse it's got a Narnia theme because it's actually in the house next door to where C.S. Lewis lived.
Ah, cool.
And he's created this massive treehouse, and I'm carving Aslan the lion outside the treehouse. So it's perfect. It's brilliant. And he's building a second treehouse so you can stay in this thing. When I say treehouse, it's kind of, you walk in and it's a 30-foot wide room, you know, with big four-poster bed and all sorts of things going on in it. It's like insanely posh for a treehouse. He's building a second one, and that's the Rivendell one.
Oh, he knows his audience.
I've created an elf that's going to hang on a swing like she's swinging, which is going to hang from the underneath of that one.
That's my next long weekend away. Sorted.
Yes, please. Also, that is the classiest in-show advert any podcast has ever had.
Yeah.
Strangely enough, I did look at quite a lot of folk tales around trees. There is one I found from Thailand about something called a Narifon. And the legend goes that there was a wife of a princess who was exiled in the Himvanti forest. And she came across trees growing very strange fruit. And the fruit that they grew was miniature women. And I'd love to tell you, you just put the woman in a glass of water and whoom, you got a big one.
Yeah.
But according to the stories, the reason these trees existed was to protect the heroine as she traversed the forest because women were immune to their charms. But the trees were said to be very dangerous for men because a man would be wandering through the forest, would pluck a Narifon or fruit maiden, as they're known, and then have intercourse with her and become sterile. If he had any magical abilities, they would be lost to him. There's a small problem, gentlemen. The Narifon fruit maidens were 8 inches long. Logistically, how are you meant to have intercourse with a woman who doesn't even make it to the end of a standard ruler?
Carefully.
It would have to be really cold.
Yeah. What was Simon's chat up line about 2 inches? Something like that.
Yes.
In terms of other trees that are made up, there's a tree in the Quran called the Tree of Zakum, and as mentioned multiple times there, it is said to exist only in hell, and it contains extremely bitter fruit that is fed to those in hell who beg for something to eat, and the demonic tree gains sustenance for the flames of hellfire itself. There are passages in the Quran that explain that people in hell are starved into madness with hunger until they have no choice but to eat the foul-smelling fruit from there. And yet this gets worse, because after you eat fruit from the Tree of Zakum, do you know what happens to you? Your face falls off.
Wow.
That's very route one as a result. Like, you know, you're in hell, what do we do? Okay, we're gonna let a 5-year-old come up with what this punishment is. Their face falls off. But just like the expression, like they're just a blank slate of skin, or their entire skin peels off.
I mean, I'd like to hope it's basically like the Nazi in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
One more thing before my selection. I took a little look at man-eating trees. Obviously, we know about the Triffids. I don't know if the Triffids ever ate men. Barry, you look genuinely perturbed. Don't worry. So there is, in Japanese folklore, the Juboko, which, according to folklore, is quite a dangerous tree because they were once normal, law-abiding trees until battles were fought near them and their roots were soaked in blood and they got the taste for blood.
Oh, that's very Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah. And so if you're walking past it, it will snatch you up with its long arms and forcefully jam its branches into you and suck you dry of blood.
Ooh. That's a cool legend. I quite like that.
It is a cool legend. There is another story about a tree in Madagascar. So a chap called Edmund Spencer, writing for the New York World Daily Edition on the 26th of April, 1874, wrote an article about a letter published by a German explorer named Karl Lecce. And he reported encountering a sacrificial ritual performed by the Mkodo tribe of Madagascar. And he described it being a sacrifice to the tree. In this account, he said, the slender, delicate palpi with the fury of starved serpents quivered a moment over her head. Then, as if instinct with demoniac intelligence fastened upon her in sudden coils round and round her neck and arms. Then, while her awful screams and yet more awful laughter rose wildly to be instantly strangled down again into a gurgling moan, the tendrils, one after another, like green great serpents with brutal energy and infernal rapidity, rose, retracted themselves, and wrapped about her in fold after fold, ever tightening with cruel swiftness and savage tenacity of anacondas fastening upon their prey.
That's spooky.
Real spooky.
Is that I wonder, is that the suicide tree? Because that's native to Madagascar. Cerbera odolum, it's a bit like oleander, and they're in India as well, but they're really, really poisonous. And during witch trials in Madagascar, they used to go for trial by ordeal by feeding people, ingesting bits of suicide tree.
Oh gosh, is that like, because there was the Queen of Madagascar who we talked about on a previous show, who I think accused people of witchcraft, so maybe it was that. It's not like the suicide tree. It is absolutely 100% made up.
Okay.
Fair enough.
I was trying to, explain what the inspiration for it might have been.
It could have stemmed from that, couldn't it? The suicide tree's been often used in murder as a way of murdering people because the flavour isn't very strong and it's easily masked.
There must be a murder mystery that uses the suicide tree. I feel like Christie must have used it.
But people keep dismissing it because it's called the suicide tree. Yeah. It's not called the homicide tree.
It can't be because they would have done it themselves, surely.
We've got to eliminate some suspects, and this guy is top of the list to eliminate.
Do you think it was the guy who named it? Yeah. He was actually the suspect in a murder. He called it the suicide tree to
cover
take
himself
the
off. Yeah.
But for my choice, gentlemen, I'm going to pick a tree that is just 5 centimetres long. So in 2009, a 28-year-old called Artyom Sidorkin from Western Russia went to see the doctors because he was having agonising chest pains and coughing up blood.
So immediately
he x-rayed them and doctors saw a spot on his lungs and said, I'm really sorry, mate, you've got a tumour in there. We think it's cancerous. We're going to have to whap it out. I'm well aware, Barry, what you have just gone through. Surprise, guys. We're actually recording this before Barry goes into surgery. And I just realised how awfully inappropriate this story is, but also how serendipitous it is that I'm going to tell it. You're going to be fine, mate.
Yeah.
It was expected that a large portion of his lung would have to be removed. Barry's only getting a small portion of his lung removed. It's fine, guys. But before the major...
I swear to God, if I die, I'm going to haunt the shit out of you.
Please do. You'll be a great conversationalist as a ghost. Before the major part of the surgery began, there was a biopsy on the area just to try and determine whether the cancer was malign or benign. And anyway, they looked in it and it wasn't cancer. Artyom Sidorkin had a 5-centimetre long fir tree growing inside his lung.
Wow!
And clearly what had happened is that he'd inhaled a seed at some point and it had found the conditions in his lung just right to germinate. And obviously it had grown and it had started to interfere with the capillaries in his lung.
Oh my.
Wow.
Yeah. I am delighted to say he is fine. The tree didn't make it.
But imagine if they'd the way sometimes you get, like, if you have like something removed or like a teeth that the doctor says, do you want to keep it? He just kept growing it and now he's got a lovely Christmas tree.
Yeah. Amazing,
I would have 100% had that on my kitchen windowsill.
Yeah, a little bonsai from inside you. Is that going to induce you to wear do you wear a face mask when you're working with wood anyway, Simon?
I do most of the time. When you're using a chainsaw, the particles are quite big, so they tend to, not dusty as such. But when I'm sanding, I use a face mask.
This is going to haunt your nightmares now forever.
Yeah. It's like, stay away from those seeds.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You are welcome. I will show you a picture later. It is unpleasant.
I wasn't sure where to go with this, so I kind of looked around and there was the dangerous trees, the sort of deadly trees, the ones that kill you. And there's quite a few of those, like you mentioned the suicide tree before. And then there was a whole sort of funny names thing, but that kind of, I don't know, it's a little bit, you had the sausage tree and the shag bark.
Yeah. I've seen a sausage tree when me and my wife went on safari for our honeymoon in Botswana in the Okavango Delta. And the pods are like enormous charcuterie.
Yes. Yeah. So I kind of steered away from that, really, to be honest, just because it was like, it's got a very limited sort of, there's no reason that they'd be the worst at all. So I've kind of settled on trees that are just rubbish at being trees. So I've got a bit of a shortlist and I was in two minds as to which would kind of win, really, because there's so many dangerous ones. There's just too big a list. So I'm going to start with mentioning the bunya pine. So bunya pine. This is Araucaria bidwilli, which is one letter off being funny, but it's got a danger aspect because the pine cones grow to up to kind of 18 to 20 inches long and weigh 22 pounds, which is 10 kilos.
Oh, wow.
So at certain times of year, they fall out of the tree, which is really dangerous. But I couldn't find any record of a death, even though it definitely would kill you.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Yeah, because people, I think, will have probably thought about coconuts as well. And there's very few. I think there's like about 4 stories of people being killed with coconuts in 200 years or something. That's not very common at all.
No, it's not common. No. That was the other one I kind of looked at. So the thing about the bunya pine is it drops these seeds. Most seeds are designed to be able to get carried away from the tree by animals or by the wind or anything like that. It's a bit kind of short-sighted of the tree to have these massive pine cones that only fall about, you know, within the vicinity of the tree. Mm. So I was like, and then I realized actually it's kind of, it's a last of a surviving species of a section of a genus that was widespread during the Mesoic and the Jurassic era. So obviously, you know, dinosaurs could probably eat these things and spread the seeds. So,
yeah.
So it's just out of its time. It's just not got the memo that time has moved on. And, you know,
foliage was bigger back then as well. So I guess the massive pine cones made more of a sense then than it does now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just not very good at being a tree.
No, it sort of sounds like the panda of the tree world, that without human intervention, it, like, by all rights, it should be dead. It should be extinct.
Quite. So no idea how it's kind of keeping on surviving. So the only story I could find about that sort of killing anything was it killed a cockatoo underneath a tree.
So, to be fair, that is funnier than if it had killed a man.
Well, yes, quite. It was the sentence after that in the article that made me laugh, because his residents are urged to be on the lookout.
It's not roaming.
Please tell me that in the local area there were pictures put up on lampposts of, have you seen this tree?
but with like a mustache and then a full facial beard and clean shaven, in case, you know, it was going in disguise.
Yeah, that's the one, definitely. So yeah, that was kind of that was the thought. But I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna get kind of closer to home, because I'm the trees that I'm most associated with and know best are the UK trees, obviously. So there's a few trees out there. Horse chestnut, other than being used for conchophytes, it's susceptible to virtually every type of fungus. It drops big branches occasionally without warning. It's brittle. It just looks kind of pretty in the springtime. The flowers are quite nice, but other than that, it's just not kind of very effective as a tree. And the biggest spread of the seeds with that one is small children and not and not animals, really, because it's actually poisonous to most animals. So,
is it one of those? There's a lot of trees that I know are the article I read called them thirsty, where it hoovers up the nutrients that other trees could use as well. So they're also just quite bad to have in your garden because they stop other trees being there.
Yeah, I don't know if that's one of those, but there are there's definitely few of those.
Yeah,
but I think the sort of worst at kind of being a tree, in as much as its kind of interaction with man, I'm actually going to choose the Manchester poplar. So the Manchester poplar, the female of the species. So this is a tree that has separate male and female trees.
Is that not usual?
Well, you get monoecious and dioecious trees. So either same sex or on the same tree. You know, like with ash trees, you can have an entirely male tree with one female branch.
Wow. So hang on, so you're telling me that there's lots and lots of gay trees out there? I mean, there's lots of gay animals, so it makes lots of sense. It just never occurred to me that might be the case.
And lots of trees that fall in between the non-binary spectre.
Ah, yes, of course.
The players. Yeah. So, I mean, so Manchester Poplar has got separate female and male trees. And female trees produce seeds that are effectively like cotton wool. In fact, in America, poplars are known as cottonwood.
Yes.
For that reason. But in Manchester, it was causing a massive problem. They planted loads of these trees because they're really good at absorbing pollution.
Yeah.
So, but what they were finding was that the wool, the cotton wool type stuff, was just everywhere. It looked like it was snowing. And the only time that that could kind of really be effective is in, my wife mentioned this earlier on, apparently by 2080 it won't snow ever anywhere in Britain if we carry the way we're going. So, you know, they could reintroduce the Manchester poplar and, you know, yeah, create, but it would be in springtime, which,
yeah, kind of, yeah. People, we'll just push Christmas back 3 months.
Yeah,
it'd be fine. They have, yeah, really, they've like, really shallow roots as well, don't they, Manchester poplars?
Yes, so
they fall over a lot.
Yeah, and they drink so much water as well, in terms of they kind of infest drains a lot. They can cause subsidence. So it kind of, that's going against them. They're also a brittle tree which can drop branches at a moment's notice. What they ended up doing is they pretty much eradicated every female. It's a black poplar hybrid, basically. They pretty much eradicated every female tree. So the only way you can grow them now is from a cutting from the male tree. So essentially, by producing an effect that looked like as an explosion in a tampon factory, the Manchester poplar kind of signed its own demise. Really. So it was a bit of a, you know, probably right tree, wrong place more than anything. But in terms of interaction with human beings, it was, it caused a huge problem.
That's and, amazing.
Yeah. So there you go. So there's my
candidate. I like that you've given, I mean, I would have said if you'd gone first, I said, oh, that's a really clever like way of saying, oh, it interacted really poorly with humans. But you've just gone after Ben's suggestion. Not going to foreshadow my decision at the end, but you may have brought a small tree to a massive tree, but you may have brought a massive tree to a tiny tree in your lung gunfight. I read about good trees to begin with. I read about my favourite, forget Eurovision, my favourite international competition is the European Tree of the Year competition. If you're not aware of this, it's been contested since 2011. It was inspired by the Tree of the Year contest, which had been organised in the Czech Republic by the Czech Environmental Partnership Foundation quite some time. And the European round is like a finale consisting of the winners of various national rounds. And there's online voting. Everyone can go and vote in it, organised by the Environmental Partnership Association. The first vote was in 2011, as I said, and since then, the number of countries involved in the contest has risen from 5 to 16, and they're working to establish competitions in other countries around the world as well. The winner in 2020, with 47,226 votes cast online, was the Guardian of the Flooded Village, which is a Scots pine, about 350 years old, in the area of Chudobin in the Czech Republic. It was a home win for the organisers. and it grows on a little headland by a dam called Vier, and the name of the pine is because there was a village there that was flooded. Basically, it ceased to exist when the dam was constructed, and so this one tree is on the end of this little promontory, and according to legend, a devil sat under the pine the night and played the violin. But apparently the area is, it's in a little valley, and there's loud winds whistle through the valley quite a lot, so that's maybe where that legend comes from. Other previous winners I like was England, Britain, the UK hasn't won the European competition yet, but there was a victory for an English oak in 2017, but this was in Poland, and it's Oak Joseph. Oak Joseph is in a area near a mansion which the Michelski family owned, but during World War II, it was shelter for a Jewish family that hid from the Nazis, this tree. And the oak is so famous, it was printed on the 100 zloty bill in Poland for quite some time. But naturally, because there's a European Tree of the Year competition, there's also a British Tree of the Year competition at a more local level, organised by the Woodland Trust. And nominated trees are shortlisted by a panel of experts before going to again to a public vote to select a tree of the year. In fact, in 1 year, I think the viewers of the one show on BBC TV got to vote on it. So one winner, I've read about some of the winners. The Gilwell Oak is an oak tree on the grounds of the Scout Association's headquarters at Gilwell Park in Essex. Apparently Dick Turpin used it as a hiding place, and it's become closely associated with the Scout movement. It provided material for the first wood badges, and Robert Baden-Powell said it inspired, the tree inspired him to create the moral of the acorn and the oak, sort of the analogy of growth for the Scout movement and personal growth for the members. There's the Ross Trevor Oakwood in Northern Ireland. And this is, Ross Trevor Oakwood is a wood in Northern Ireland, and it is home of the Invisible Tree, which won the Northern Ireland's Tree of the Year competition in 2019. It is not an invisible tree. It was just 1 year they did a survey of the wood and left out a tree in the survey. So that tree is called the Invisible Tree.
I mean, that is top-notch branding, but also very disappointing when you get there.
Yeah, it's really good. And there's a tree called Nelly's Tree in Aberford in West Yorkshire, which won in 2018 both the English and British Tree of the Year competitions. Came ninth in the European Tree of the Year awards. And it's actually three trees in the shape of an N, which have been grafted together, three beech trees been grafted together by a local man to impress his girlfriend Nelly in the 1920s.
Oh, I was going to say, I thought they would be part of God's alphabet book.
Yes. N is for Nelly's oak.
Yeah.
And finally, I read about the Brimin Oak, which is an old tree in Powys in Wales. It was scheduled to be felled as part of construction of the Newtown Bypass in 2015, but was saved thanks to a petition. And it was runner-up in the European Tree of the Year Awards afterwards. However, on the flip side of that, the Cubbington Pear Tree, which was a winner of the England's Tree of the Year competition in 2015.
And also, the Cubbington Pear Tree is a great CBeebies cartoon.
Yeah, it sounds like an excellent pub, actually, doesn't it? The Cubbington...
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah, you'd have a pint of cider there. Sadly, it was cut down. Despite a petition with 20,000 signatures as part of the HS2 high-speed railway development in October this year. The Department of Transport said they tried to, find any possible options and couldn't come up with any, and ended up chopping it down. But they have saved some cuttings from the pear tree to try and regrow children from it, essentially. But I mentioned Dick Turpin there, and Dick Turpin made me think about Tyburn Tree. For non-British listeners or people who don't know, Tyburn Tree was the name of the gallows at the junction of Edgware Road, Bayswater Road and Oxford Street in London, near Marble Arch, near our Marble Arch tube station. And the tree was a particular form of gallows, the triple tree, which had a horizontal wooden triangle supported by three legs, also known as the three-legged mare or three-legged stool. Public executions took place at Tyburn since the 1100s, it seems like, right up until the end of the 18th century. But Dick Turpin was one of the people who was hanged on Tyburn Tree. And others included John Bradshaw, Henry Ireton and Oliver Cromwell, who were all already dead, but were dug up again and hanged there after King Charles II was restored to the throne of England, just to, make a point.
Just to teach them a lesson.
Yeah. And there are some Tyburn Tree euphemisms. To take a ride to Tyburn, or simply to go west, was to go to one's hanging, which makes a much more sinister bent on that Village People / Pet Shop Boys song. Lord of the Manor of Tyburn was the public hangman.
Oh, that is a hell of a title.
Isn't it? Yeah. And Dancing the Tyburn Jig was the act of being hanged. Because it wasn't a long drop, it was a short drop. So you were sort of, the stool was pulled away and your neck wasn't snapped, you were basically asphyxiated over the course of several hours.
Yeah, that's an alternative to the hemp fandango in what would be the grimmest and most sinister edition of Strictly ever.
Yeah. And the crowd would cheer a good dying, but would jeer if you showed any weakness. And apparently Dick Turpin, one of the reasons he became so famous is that he was really, the article I read described him as insouciant when he went to his death.
What an adjective to bring to an execution.
I know, right? Just imagine sipping on a cocktail, rifling through some poetry.
Yeah.
Signing autographs.
It's like, we should point out, I don't know if you're going to mention it, but since we are mentioning like awful trees that humans have done awful things on, there is a wealth of trees to choose from in Louisiana, Alabama, and Mississippi. But awful, not funny. We're not talking about them anymore, but it seemed inappropriate not to mention them since you talked about the Tyburn jury.
Absolutely. I did want to mention one last person related to someone we've mentioned on the show before. On the 19th of April, 1779, a man, a clergyman, in fact, called James Hackman, was hanged there following his murder of a socialite called Martha Ray, who was the mistress of John Montagu, the 4th Earl of Sandwich, and the man who claims credit for having the sandwich named after him.
Wow.
I hope he laid on the refreshments for the public execution.
Yeah, it was just vol-au-vents.
Sam, did you read about the machineel tree?
The machineel tree? No.
Yeah.
I did. It's known to be the most poisonous, I think.
It's really dangerous. It's... Yeah, the Guinness Book of Records certainly called it the most dangerous. It's called the beach apple, yes, or poison guava. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or in Spanish, arbol de la muerte, which literally means tree of death.
You don't get much better than that, really. Yeah.
It's all parts of it apparently are extremely poisonous. And they put up signs beside it because it grows quite widespreadly in the Caribbean. And so they put loads of signs that just warning you not to go near it, or they put like red ribbons around them to ward you off, put a red ring of paint, all sorts of things. Yeah, you don't even want to be underneath one of the trees when it's raining because it contains phorbol in the sap. Apparently, raindrops can carry some of the diluted sap down onto you and it can burn your skin really severely.
Oh, gosh.
It's horrendous. Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say about the radiologist, but you may have read that one.
Yeah, go on, say it. Yeah, it's great.
Well, it was the comments that Nicola, a radiologist, had decided to try and eat the fruit, not knowing what it was. She encouraged a friend to as well, and then they realised they suddenly couldn't breathe or were really struggling to breathe, and their throat swelled up and they ended up going to hospital. It was the fact that she said it was soothed by pina colada
with
milk.
Yeah, exactly. The same solution if you get chili in your eye, you're meant to bathe your eye in milk.
Yeah. I've never tried pina colada with bathing my eye in pina colada after.
Oh, mate, you should. It's the quickest way to get that buzz. Also, I like... It does say here that Caribbean carpenters have been using manchineel wood for centuries. They have to cut it and dry it in the sun to neutralise the sap. That sounds a bit like, eating fugu. So, Simon, would you, as a tree sculptor, work with manchineel wood?
I don't know. I've used some dangerous woods in terms of dust. Like there's numerous toxic trees. The yew tree has got quite a toxic dust to it.
It's got a pretty toxic reputation, mate, as well.
Yeah.
True.
Sorry, that took me a second. Yeah, very good.
Non-British listeners, Google it and then have a real sit down and a cry.
Yeah.
And then probably delete your cookies.
I suppose if people didn't tell you it was manchineel wood, then that would probably be more or less reassuring. I don't know.
It would be. I have had an instance where I got quite bad. It felt like really bad sunburn carving a tree called a macrocarpa, which is a cypress variety of tree. And the dust, I think it was a combination of things, but it was a really hot day. I was sweating loads, and the combination of the dust with my sweat made it look like I had sunburn around my goggles, and it was really painful. But yeah, that's the only time I've been kind of burned by trees, if you like.
You sort of think, oh, trees are quite friendly creatures, not friendly creatures. You sort of, there's something like quite soothing about them in a way, like the sound of the wind through the trees, or you'd think of them as a place of shelter and they provide shade and all these things. And then you're like, half of them apparently are out to kill us, it turns out.
There's some really vindictive trees out there.
Naughty Ents, to go back to your Lord of the Rings references.
Well, the Naughty Ents is my favourite officer at university.
What else did I read about? Strychnine comes from trees. I didn't realise that. So, poison, strychnine, beloved of murder mystery books and things like that. It comes from Strychnos nux vomica, the strychnine tree. It's a native to India and Southeast Asia. It looks really ordinary looking at pictures of it. It's got, quite thick leaves, and the seeds are like little sort of coin-sized seeds, and that's where the poison is most readily available from. They can cause eye pain, dizziness, muscle cramping, paralysis, and a heavy tongue. Maybe the worst of all possible outcomes for a comedian like Ben. But apparently it also has medical applications in cancer treatment, so I couldn't pick that. I tried to find a tree that's trying to kill us and doesn't seem to have any point to it whatsoever. And I came up with the sandbox tree, also known as the dynamite tree. It was native to North and South America. No, Ben, we do not. It doesn't grow bits of dynamite on it like the sausage tree grows sausages.
I mean, that does sound like it's wandered out of a Looney Tunes cartoon. Just Yosemite Sam and Wile E. Coyote just planting dynamite trees and blowing themselves up.
Just naturally occurring nitroglycerin. It's called the dynamite tree because it can potentially be 200 feet tall, first of all. And to begin with, it's really nasty. The tree itself has got really sharp spikes all the way up its trunk. If you imagine, like, rose thorns, but they're the size of your finger, basically.
Oh, no thanks.
And not thin. They're, like, thick. You know the way rose thorns tend to taper? They taper, you know, to scale. So they're really thick at the bottom. They go to the length of your finger. And they're really, really horrible. There are loads of highly toxic sap in the tree as well. Apparently that's been used for poison darts down through the ages. But the most dangerous bit of the tree is not the trunk, nor the sap, but rather what the tree does when it's reproducing or mating. The name might be a bit of a giveaway, guys. The tree launches massive pods that explode, propelling basically tree shrapnel at speeds of 160 miles an hour up to 100 feet away from the tree.
What?
They're like the size of pumpkins, some of these things. And they're like tree grenades, basically.
How have I never heard of this? This is astonishing.
Yeah, it's
brilliant.
It can be really, really dangerous. Like, they can cause very serious injury because, like I say, it's shrapnel at 160 miles an hour. It can be blasted into the body of any human or animal within the vicinity. And so, I don't, obviously pine cones can get heavy and fall off a tree. Coconuts can get heavy, fall off a tree. Some trees, like the strychnine tree, produce poisonous seeds but also have positive uses, like the use in cancer treatments. This tree, for all I could see, has so little point to it. I say ironically, given it's covered in points, and then just tries to basically bombard you into into submission when it's horny.
Could you not, firstly, where is this tree found?
North and South America.
Could you not, if you wanted to create sustainable home security, instead of like barbed wire and angry dogs, because you know that's the thing with a Doberman, they run out after about 10 years, just plant these trees and you know no one's going to go near your house knowing that they might get some angry spiky pumpkin shrapnel in their gob.
But you have to make sure it's when you leave the house, you have to make sure the tree is aroused. So maybe you've got to put some tree porn on or just put a particularly sexy dynamite tree across the street. You just sort of pull a curtain off to reveal it to your guard tree just to make sure it's ready to pop at any second.
Yeah, and you put TNT by AC/DC on as well. That's their version of Let's Get It On.
Yeah. So our candidates this week for the world's worst tree are Ben's suggestion of the tiny fir tree growing inside Artyom Sidorkan, the stuff of nightmares. Simon's suggestion of the Manchester poplar or cottonwood, the tree that makes it a winter wonderland even outside the Arndale Centre. And my suggestion of the sandbox or dynamite tree, the tree that basically is a mortar in disguise. I think, you know, they're all really good suggestions, but Simon, you and I both had such a visceral reaction to Ben's suggestion of a tiny fir tree growing inside a man's lung that I think it's a walkover. I think we've got to give it to you hands down, Ben. The tiny fir tree is the winner. Congratulations.
Yay.
And also...
yeah, absolutely.
Before we go, I've got to give you some of the best news of the week, and this news is... Well, it's from the month we recorded this, so it's a few weeks ago now. This news is from The Guardian, In a tribute to David Bowie, the Royal Mint has launched a commemorative coin into space.
Using what? They've just wanged it into the air with a catapult.
Oh yeah, did you not know that the Royal Mint also has a space program? It turns out. No, they used a balloon to take this coin, which is minted as part of its Music Legends collection, with David Bowie's face in it, to an altitude of 35,656 metres, and then it descended back down to Earth in Britain. They said it's the first time a UK coin has been launched into space, and it's now going to be offered as a competition prize for Bowie fans on the Royal Mint's Facebook page. Ben is already frantically Googling. There's a few of these David Bowie coins being minted, ranging in price from £13 for an unlimited £5 coin. Now, that has always bugged me, these commemorative coins that are £5, yet you pay £13 for it. Up to £72,195 for the limited £1,000 denomination 1 kilo gold-proof coin, of which only 11 have been struck. Others to feature on these coins include Queen and Elton John, and it has Bowie with the lightning bolt from Aladdin Sane on it, and a glitter effect on it as well.
I mean, if Pink Floyd, the band who wrote the song Money, aren't also available there, and there's something that's going very wrong.
I thought that's a nice little memento and a nice sort of tribute to Bowie, the man who fascinated us with Space Oddity and so many other things that taught us to look to the stars. Simon, before we go, where can people find out more about you and a tree sculpture?
Well, my website, treecarving.co.uk, is fairly easy to remember. I'm at treecarving on Twitter, at Simon O'Rourke on Instagram, just to make it more awkward, and at Simon O'Rourke Tree Carving on Facebook. So just Google my name and you'll find me.
Some combination of tree carving and Simon O'Rourke will get them to
pretty
you.
Pretty much, yeah.
Very good. Meanwhile, we're all off to chop Ben open, count the rings, and see how old he is. Because we couldn't find his birth cert. Thank you for listening to Worstford Forward. Goodbye.
Goodbye. I'll be hollow inside.